I'm Liam Printer, and this is The Motivated Classroom. Hello, bonjour, bienvenidos, falcha, welcome to The Motivated Classroom podcast. Thank you all for joining me, Garamila Mahagav. Today we're talking about use of questions in the language classroom and how they are so essential, so important, so central to everything that we should do in our language classroom. Of course, as teachers, we ask loads and loads of questions in every class. That's natural and it happens in every single classroom across every subject. But the way you ask questions and how they are done in a language acquisition classroom are really important for building relationships, but also for acquisition. So we're going to talk about questions today. And of course, that means we need our Irish word for today, which is, of course, the word Ceisteanna, meaning questions. I mean, I had to go there, didn't I? Obviously. Before we get started, I want to say a quick Gura Mahagav thank you to all of you who have signed up for the Geneva 2-day in-person workshop in April, because it is now pretty much full. I checked this morning, I think there's 3 or 4 places left. And from what I understand, the Institute of Teaching and Learning at Geneva have said they've had an inquiry about those places. So essentially, it's full. Unbelievable. If you're still thinking of attending, please get on to that as soon as you can. I'm so excited about doing an in-person workshop on CI and TPRS and teaching with stories for 2 days in Geneva. If you want more information, go to my website, have a look up on workshop. And the other one is just to say a massive thank you to all of the patrons of the podcast and those of you who have been on my Buy Me a Coffee. There's been quite a few people on that recently. And I always have such an appreciation, especially now that I realize the podcast episodes are not as frequent as they used to be. I'm still trying to write that book, coming up with a major block of trying to write that book, but I'll get there eventually. So I don't have as much time to make these episodes and edit them. And so I just really appreciate people continuing to be patrons of the podcast and still following and still sharing and going in the Buy Me a Coffee. I really do appreciate it. So thank you. It does help me, those coffees and crisps that you get me every month. It really does help. All right, let's get talking about questions then. So first and foremost is how I use questions in my classroom. Now, this actually came, ironically, from a question from a listener. Someone sent me a message and said, could you do a full episode just about questions, how you use them, when, which questions, because I feel it's so important and I'm not sure I'm doing it well in my class. So I'm sure you are doing it well to that listener. We all ask questions in class, but it's important to be really obvious about it. So I don't have a lot of stuff on my walls. I'm not one of those teachers who has beautiful artwork all over my walls. My class feels welcoming. I have some papel picado, I have some cultural artifacts, and I have question words. They are on my walls, and so are the connecting phrases, the rejoinders, things like no puede ser, or es obvio, or no me digas, you can't say, or these type of expressions like the join sentences and kind of gestures or things people can say as reactions to things that are going on. They are on my walls because they're useful. But I do have question words up behind the board, and they're just so critical for understanding. Like, you have to understand what question is being asked in life to be able to respond. So for communication, we absolutely need these question words and we use them all of the time. So that's the first thing. Have them obvious on your wall. If you have a common language like English, then you translate them. And so they're really obvious and easy for everyone to access. The second thing I do to make the most important question words obvious and understandable is I have some gestures or kind of shoutbacks, or I don't know how you would call them, kind of sounds, I guess, that students do for certain question words. And this is a job. So I originally did this just with the word quién. So in Spanish, quién means who. And this is just with my beginner's class. Usually in the second year, they understand what that word means. And so that's no longer a job. But someone has the job that when every time I say quién en la clase, which means who, someone in the class, their job is to go who, who. And they love it. They find it hilarious. And if they forget, often someone else will remind them. Do I do it for the whole year? Not necessarily for the beginning and the first few months, but I won't be, you know, really strict on it towards the end of the year if everyone's understanding that. Only if the class continues to do it, they think it's fun. Now, that used to be it. But I've introduced a few other jobs because I was realizing the students were actually struggling, even after a long time, with words like when and where and how much, things like that. So I've got little jobs for those ones now too. So again, this is typically with my beginners group. So the group of students I have who are in their first year of the language, I might have them in the second year as well, depending on the class. So for cuando, if I say cuando, which means when, the student whose job it is has to stand up and make a gesture like they're looking at their watch. So they stand up and just make that silent gesture with their wrist like they're looking at their watch, and everyone knows when, cuando. When I say donde, which means where, then the students have to all do that kind of where you put your... It's hard to do this on a podcast, not on video. I'll have to do a video of this. So when you, it's like you're looking for something, you know. So when you put your hand above your eyes, as if you're looking for something, with your thumb on your temple, the side of your head. And so when I say donde, they all go like this, like they're looking for something. And then they all know that this means where. And I realized that when I introduced these, students were understanding those questions so much better and so much more quickly. So when I was doing assessments, and in the past I was asking a question with donde or cuando, and many of them were not understanding what I thought was quite obvious to all of them, because we use it so often, but it wasn't obvious to them. But now that we have those gestures, they do. And the other one that I introduced this year actually is the word cuantos. Now cuantos in Spanish means how much or how many. And so whenever I would use that, they kind of hold up, the one student whose job it is, they'll hold up their hands as if they were like making that gesture between your thumb and your fingers, like money, kind of like money gesture. So like that's what we use for cuantos. And they immediately get this means how much or how many. And again, what's interesting is it's one student's job to do that. So if they forget, then I will point it out. But most of them will just do it. When I say cuantos, they'll immediately do that. Now, you could have it for every question word, but I think that becomes too much then, because you ask so many questions, you'll end up stopping your class all the time to try and figure out the gesture and who is supposed to do it. Start just with maybe donde and quién, and then bring in the other ones of cuando and cuantos if you want. So have some gestures for key questions, I think, is the first thing about understanding them. At this point, I want to kind of give a big kudos to my colleague Chloe, who was on the podcast years ago talking about her experience of using TPRS, co-created stories, in her own classroom. But she had an ingenious way of teaching the very difficult construction in French, est-ce que. For those who don't speak French, est-ce que comes before a question in French. And it doesn't really mean anything. It just kind of means there's a question on the way, and it's not used with every question. Many questions are just done by inflection, like raising your voice. But a lot of questions in French start with est-ce que. And it's very difficult to translate or to try and have people understand that. So whenever she said est-ce que, students would hold up their index finger and she would say, question coming. And you would see when you observed her class, anytime she said est-ce que, immediately loads of students would put their finger up and someone would go, question coming. And it just focused everyone's mind that when you hear est-ce que, there's a question on the way. I thought it was genius. Having a gesture with that helped so much. And of course, over time, you gradually get rid of it. And the next thing I want to say about questions is, of course, circling. So if you've attended one of my workshops, you'll know I talk about circling. And if you have read into comprehensible input or teaching with co-created stories, you'll have heard this term, circling. And circling essentially means asking lots of questions to the students and circling back to the answer. That's kind of what it means. So the example would be, you've made a statement. So let's say the statement is, Jenny was dancing in the cinema. In my story or whatever I'm talking to about, like there's a picture or something. And I say, well, this girl, Jenny, she was dancing in the cinema. And now circling would be, I might start with the negative question. So I might start by saying, was Jenny dancing in the hallway? And they'd say, no. And I'd say, no, she wasn't dancing in the hallway. She was dancing in the cinema. So see the way I gave the negative question, I got the no answer, and that gave me the opportunity to circle back to the positive again. So that's kind of the point. And then you might do an either or. You might say, okay, so was Jenny dancing in the classroom or was she dancing in the cinema? I can't even remember what my sentence was now, but you get the point. And then they'll say, yeah, she was dancing in the cinema. Ah, right. Okay, so she was dancing in the cinema. So again, it gives me that chance to circle back. And then you would go for the yes version. And this is when you're giving the statement again, but you have to look a bit like you're asking a question. So you might hold your hand on your chin and say something like, okay, so let me get this straight. Jenny was, she was dancing in the cinema, right? And they'd be like, yeah, that's right. And you go, oh yes, you're right. Jenny was dancing in the cinema. So by me doing that process of no, either or yes, I've circled back to that phrase I want them to hear lots of times, like 8, 9 times. And then you can have an open question like, So was Jenny dancing in the cinema on her own or with other people? So again, that's an either or. So maybe I'll go for an open one now. It's even hard for me to do an open one because I'm so used to the either or. So it might be like, where was Jenny dancing? And so that's more open. They can give me the answer. Or why was Jenny dancing in the cinema? Much more open to ideas. So that's very quickly how circling works. Now, it can feel very contrived and very difficult. At the beginning, it certainly did for me. It felt very unnatural the way I was doing it. But over time, you see that it's really critical to give them more reps and input of hearing those questions and of hearing the sentence that you want. And so what I did was I printed a very simple page and put it on the back wall of my classroom. And it just said, no, either or, yes, open. And it reminded me, once I've given a statement, whatever the statement is, it could be the statement like, over the weekend, I fell off my bike. And I'm telling them this about myself. Yeah, I was at the traffic lights and I fell off my bike. Now I'm going to circle that. So by looking at the back wall, I see the word no. So I want to be a negative question to get us started with our circling. So I might say, right, so was it yesterday that I fell off my bike? And then they'll be like, no, it was at the weekend. You're like, yeah, oh yeah, you're right. During the weekend, I fell off my bike. Yeah, at the traffic lights. I know, it was so embarrassing. So maybe they're more advanced. I'm throwing in some of those extra phrases. Now I might go either or. So can you guys remember, was I at the traffic lights when I fell off my bike? Or was I just outside my house? Oh, you were at the traffic light. That's right, I was. I was at the traffic lights. Super embarrassing. So I was at the traffic lights and I fell off my bike, right? And they'd be like, yeah. I'm like, yeah. And now I've circled, and then I'll give the next piece of information. So it can be about anything, any statement, but that is how circling works. And it's an absolutely key core skill that you need to work on and practice and hone in your classroom for all types of questions and any input activity. So if it's a movie talk, a map talk, you're doing a picture talk, you're doing a special person interview, whatever, you're going to use loads of circling to get more reps and inputs. So they're listening to that correct version and they're listening to your inputs more and more. Now, people often say, but it feels weird to do it exactly in that order every time. You don't have to. You can mix and match. Sometimes I'll go straight to either or, then it'll go to open, then back to either or, then it'll be no, then it'll be back to either or for a different either or. It's fine. As you get more advanced and better and feel more comfortable using circling, you can, of course, jump around and mix them as you want, whatever feels natural at the time. But for me, as a novice teacher with learning how to teach with a more acquisition-driven approach, I certainly found it really helpful to have that questions on the wall at the very back. It was just me that could see it. No, either or, yes, open. Now, the next thing I want to say about questions, of course, we circle to check understanding. And most of the time when we are asking questions, we're hopefully checking for understanding because we need comprehension in our classes so that students feel competent and so that they can acquire new language. When we do this, there is a really important technique from Teach Like a Champion by Doug Lamov. It's a fantastic book. And it's about essentially, I think he calls it no opt out, or it's maybe it's something like repeat after me. I can't remember what he calls it. But the whole idea is that students need to know that they could be called upon at any time to tell me about what the previous question was. So, for example, I am talking to a student and I've asked the question, did anybody take the train at the weekend? And the student has said, yeah, I was on the train. I went to Geneva. OK, so I'm now talking to him and say, oh, you went to Geneva. OK, on the train. Right. And was that on Saturday or Sunday? I was on Sunday. And then I might turn to the class and say, OK, what did John just say? And then I'll ask someone, I'll cold call that. So I have a lot of cold calling in my class. It sounds really awful, cold calling, but it's essentially just asking questions. Now, to do this effectively, and I'm really practicing this at the moment, I'm trying to get better at it. You need to ask the question, then have a pause, and then ask a name. If you say the name first, if I say, Sophie, did John go to Geneva at the weekend? As soon as I've said the word Sophie, the rest of the class essentially know they don't need to pay attention anymore because it's Sophie who's on the spot. But if you change that sentence to, so, where did John go at the weekend? Sophie? When you've left that pause, everyone is like, really, like they're actively thinking and they're actively going back over where did he go? What did he say? And when you do this more and more in your class and you ask them to repeat something that has just been said and you're checking that they've understood, you may ask Sophie and she might go, the train? And you say, well, yeah, he took the train, but where did he go? And then I'll ask someone else and maybe they won't know. And then they know I'm coming back to them next again. I'll say, oh, okay, hold on. Remember, you need to listen to acquire new language. Let's go back to John. So John, tell us again, where were you on Saturday? Ah, right, you took the train to Geneva. And I go straight back to the same student. I'm like, where did he go? Ah, he went to Geneva. Okay, nice, thank you. So make sure you're always ready. So they know that I can ask at any time to repeat or say what the previous student has just communicated, because we've all got to learn from each other. We pay attention. It's part of respect. It's part of engagement and it's part of acquisition. So one of the times that this happens a lot in my class is when we're reading at the beginning of a class. So we read, when my class starts, the first 5 or 10 minutes are individual silent reading time of their novel of choice, the one that they have picked themselves. And these are graded novels, ones that are written for them as learners. So typically students will be reading and I'll let them read in silence for about 5 to 10 minutes. And then I'll say, okay, 1 minute left. You need to find one word that was new to you to share with your partner. And then I shut up again and I let them continue. And then I'll give them a warning of like 10 seconds. And then it's, okay, stop. Share your word with your partner, or maybe write it down on your whiteboard, then share it, tell them the context of the word and what it means. And so they do that. And then I'll randomly pick a couple of people again by cold calling. And I'll say, so say John and Sophie are sitting next to each other. I'll say, Sophie, what was John's word? And then so she knows now, oh, I've got to pay attention to his word, learn it and give it back. And then I'll go to someone else in the class and go, what was John's word? Or maybe I'll get three. And then I'll go to someone and say, what were the 3 words we've had? So they know that they can be called upon at any time. They've got to be paying full attention. And the more you do this, the more that they will see that I need to pay full attention. And you can make it fun, of course. If they don't get it, they get it wrong. You're not going to be angry. You're just going to be like, oh, poor John. We're going to have to go back to John again. John, I'm sorry. Look, the class, we're not listening to your really nice word. We need it back off you again. What was Sophie's word again? Ah, it was staircase. All right. So everyone, what was the word? Staircase. Then I go back over. What was that word? And we keep going. So this is using questions for accountability in the classroom, but also making sure that when you do that cold call, that you say the question, you pause, and then you pounce or you say the name of the student. And that will really have everyone at heightened engagement. In particular, that little silent part is really making them think, well, what did they say? And they're really trying to figure out in their head, what is it that I might be needed to communicate right now? And it's very, very powerful. Remember, if they're not listening, they're not acquiring new language. We need them fully engaged and locked in. So even in these little activities that are maybe not as, you know, compelling or interesting, because we're just talking about new words, and it's a short activity, but they know that they could be called upon at any time. Now, the next thing we will do with these words from the reading is I will ask them the question, has anyone ever? It's one of the first phrases they'll learn in my class as beginners. Has anyone ever? Has anyone ever been there? Has anyone ever done that? Has anyone else in the class scared of this? So let's say the word was clown, right? In Spanish, payaso. So I might say clown, right? Okay. And then I might say, I'll turn to the class and go, who likes clowns? Does anyone like clowns? Oh, you do. Is anyone afraid of clowns? Has anyone ever seen a clown? Has anyone ever been up really close and personal with a clown, like rather than just seeing them at the circus? And were you not afraid? So this is us entering into personal questions and answers, but I'm using the stimulus from the book. Maybe it's a word that you can't really do much, but almost every word, usually they're nouns that they come up with or verbs. You'll be able to do something with that verb. Now, the key point here is when you ask the class, does anyone like clowns? You may have a very apathetic class at that moment for whatever reason it is. They may just be teenagers and nobody says anything. That's your moment to now make it personal to you rather than go, oh, come on, someone must have done it. Come on, someone put up your hand. That makes them feel even more anxious. You now share. So nobody has said anything about clowns. So now I'll jump in and it might just be made up. I'll say, oh, you guys are lucky. I'll tell you, I do not like clowns. Like when I've been at the circus and I've seen a clown, I don't know, there's something about them that I just don't like. They're a bit freaky. I don't know what it is. Maybe it was watching scary movies with clowns, but I personally, I don't like them. Does anyone else not like them? And now you'll get a hand. Someone will put up their hand. They go, yeah, me too. I don't like them. Because you've communicated something about you. And that's really key in personal questions and answers. So you make it about whatever the word is or the topic. you ask them, did anyone ever do that? Has anyone ever seen that? Have you ever been there? Was anyone ever afraid of that? Does anyone like this? But when you get the apathetic nothingness, which sometimes happens from teenagers for whatever reason, now you start to talk in the first person. And if you have to make it up a little bit, then make it up a little bit, but talk about it a little bit and now ask again, and you'll typically get someone lean in and connect to you. And this is my next point about questions. We use questions for connections. So once someone has said that they also don't like clowns, and I'll be like, wow, is it just me and you, Sophie? We're the only ones who don't like clowns, or anyone else? Someone else's hand might go, yeah, actually, I don't really like them. Now we've got a connection between two students. So Michael and Sophie have both admitted that when they were babies or they were young, they didn't like clowns, but now they're okay with them. And now what do we do once we've done that little piece of personal questions and answers? I've shared a bit about me. What do you think happens? Now I'm going to ask the class and circle it. So I might circle that information. So is Sophie scared of clowns or is she scared of spiders? Oh, it's clowns, right? And who else is scared of them? Ah, Michael, right. So we're circling that. We're getting more information. And now I might cold call it. Then I might go to someone and say, so Sophie is afraid of what? John. And then he'll have to give me the word payasos, clowns, to make sure he's paying attention. We've done all that. We've learned stuff about Sophie and John. We've made connections to it. Now we're going to write those things down on Sophie and John's individual pages in our notebooks for each person. So as you can quickly see, just from the reading and picking out a word, we've gone into circling, personal questions, connections with me, connections to each other, and now we're writing it down on their page in pairs, making sure that we're writing exactly the same thing, we're working together. All of that takes time. So how do you make time for that? Well, that is my major point about personal questions. Leave 10 minutes in every lesson plan you have for spontaneous personal questions. Just leave a 10-minute gap. If your lesson is 50 minutes, plan for 40 minutes. If your lesson is an hour and 20 minutes, plan for an hour and 10. Leave a 10-minute gap that you can use in every lesson for the spontaneous stuff that comes up and still have time to do the other things in your lesson. It is so valuable and powerful to jump on those moments, and they're the times when you laugh and have fun together and make connections and learn about each other, and they're really listening intently and they're writing down stuff about each other. They're seeing new words. All of that is so powerful, and it's just natural. It just happened in the moment. It's not particularly exactly related to your lesson plan or your unit or your scheme of work, but they're learning language, and the more vocabulary they have and words they have and connections they have, the more they're going to want to connect and speak and interact. So if you take nothing home today other than that, leave 10 minutes of blank planning in every single lesson you do for personal questions and answers. And let's say it didn't last that long someday, or it just didn't feel like the right moment to get into it, or the words that came out weren't super interesting and we were done very, very quickly. Well, that's okay. You've got 6 minutes there to play with for the rest of your class. So you can make that next activity a bit longer, or you can do a mini whiteboard retrieval activity at the end of class. You've now got time for that. So it can be one of those little activities like write down 5 words from today, stand up, share them with your partner. You can do another brain break. There's so many things you can do with that time. So I definitely recommend that little 10-minute gap in your lesson plan. Now, the last thing I want to say about questions, and this is something I get by email a lot, is I've tried to do Star of the Week. I've tried to do the special person interview, but it fell flat very quickly. The questions I was asking obviously weren't interesting. With the Star of the Week or the special person interview, and if you don't know what I'm talking about, I've done a full episode on this. It's a technique of bringing one student up to the middle of the class and essentially interviewing them and then circling that information with the class and learning about that student. It's really powerful, but the questions need to be interesting. So yes, of course, start with some of the boring questions about, you know, your favorite subject at school, or like, do you play any musical instrument, or what sports you like? They're typically the most boring things. The students all know all of that stuff anyway. But you can then quickly make it really interesting when you ask something like, okay, so what would your perfect day be? Or ask them an either or question. Very simple. Apples or oranges? And then they'll give you one and say, why? Like, what's wrong with oranges? What's wrong with oranges? Why don't you like them? Okay, you like apples. Which ones? Green or red or yellow? What kind of apples do you like? And you just make it really interesting about that. And if you had a name for an apple, what would you call it? So you just jump on it and make it interesting. Other either or questions, really simple stuff like spaghetti or fusilli pasta. Like, it can be cats or dogs. It could be, you know, basketball or football. all sorts of stuff, like, and make like salt or pepper, like these type of things that they find really interesting and you'll actually get a great conversation out of. And then you could, one like that they really seem to like a lot is if you could have a guest, a famous person at school with you for one day, who would you pick? Now, again, you might listen to this and go, oh, hold on, I teach Japanese and teaching the conditional tense like to a beginner to try and get them to understand that question would be really difficult. How can you ask it in a way that would be understandable? So you might say something like, famous person with you in school one day, who would that be? And you might need to translate that last question, but if they've got who, quién, who, then they'll know that straight away. Other ones are like, what would your spirit animal be? If you were an animal, what animal would you be? What's your favorite animal? If you could have any exotic animal in your house, what would it be? So those conditional questions, as long as they understand the question, they don't need perfect knowledge of the conditional tense. They don't need to give you back, well, if I were an animal, I would be a giraffe. They don't need the subjunctive and all that. It just give you the word giraffe and then you can go with it. You can say, oh, you would be a giraffe. Okay. As long as they're hearing and listening to it, that's the important part, and they're understanding. We're building the system, remember. So that's how you keep the star of the week interesting. Either or questions, quickly get away from the basic ones and go towards those conditional questions. They're the ones that are quite interesting, and always animals are a really good one to go for as well. So you may have questions at the end of this long episode about questions. I hope I've cleared some of that up. Questions are absolutely critical to your language acquisition classroom. They're so important when you're learning a language. They should be one of the first things you learn is question words and understanding questions and understanding the inflection and the tone of when a question is coming. Like I said about that est-ce in French, they're critical for understanding. Almost everything you come across in life has a question whenever you're interacting with someone. So you really need to know these and they should be in there from the beginning. And having the gestures helps a lot. Leaving 10 minutes in your lesson plan every day for personal questions and having that circling poster on the wall, all of those little techniques. I hope that you found that interesting and useful. And if you're struggling with it, just remember that go back to talking about you and things that you've done and then circle that information or get them to talk to each other about it. Okay, what did I do? So what did I not do? Just anything about you and connecting, they will then have a relationship with you. You're talking about yourself and things that happened, your fears, your passions, your music, anything. And now make it about them. Who can connect to that? Rather than ask for them first. And now you have to say, oh, well, I do that too. Talk about you first. Talk about you. Allow yourself to be in the classroom. And that is incredibly empowering. All right, Gurla Mír Mahagav, thank you so much to everyone for listening. Remember, our Irish word today is Keshtana, meaning questions. And I hope you got a lot out of that. If you do have questions, please do let me know. We got some really brilliant episodes coming up about the importance of joy, excitement, happiness and positive emotions in the language classroom. I'm going to start by talking about my research in that area. And then I have some brilliant guests to talk to and just some of my own ways that I try and build that into the classroom. And with that, I will say thank you so much, Gurla Mír Mahagav, agus slán a bhaile. The Motivated Classroom podcast is an original production by Liam Printer. I'm at Liam Printer on Twitter, and my YouTube channel is Liam Printer, The Motivated Classroom. Full podcast notes with links to resources are available on my website, liamprinter.com. For more, find and follow The Motivated Classroom podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Graphics and music are provided by Paul Mahan. Intro clips are thanks to the wonderful multilingual staff at the International School of Lausanne.